Good to see you all this morning. I appreciate the opportunity for us to begin this session on the family, a very important lesson dealing with priorities. I have a worksheet that I'd like for you to make sure you all have. Some of you guys that are just coming in, you're getting the worksheet. Please wait to look at that until I draw your attention to it in just a few moments. C.K. Chesterton said this: Christianity has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and therefore rarely tried. I think Mr. Chesterton was absolutely correct. And I think whether you've been a Christian for 2 months, for 2 years, or 20 years, that you'll find your greatest challenge is finding proper balance. And I confess to you that in my life, setting proper priorities and sticking to them and playing them out in a balanced way is my greatest challenge. And I think it's often why we have difficulties in our family, is we get our priorities out of whack. So I think that's a good place for us to begin in this series. Jesus dealt with this issue of conflicting loyalties and priorities in Luke chapter 20. The hot issue of the day had to do with taxes. Some things never change, I guess. And so they were out here trying to trick Jesus, trying to get him to, get gored by the horns of a dilemma, where they gave him an either-or proposition that they thought either way that he answered this, that he would wind up falling into their hands. They asked him the very simple question: is it lawful for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not? But he detected their trickery and said to them, "Show me a denarius." I brought with me this morning a 2,000-year-old Roman denarius. This is not the actual denarius, no doubt, that was used here, but it is of the same type, and Tiberius Caesar's inscription is on the front. So someone, no doubt, sort of flipped Jesus a coin at this request, equivalent probably to our modern-day quarter, and he held it up, and he asked a very simple question: whose head is on it? And they said, Caesar's. Tiberius Caesar, to be exact. And he said to them, then render unto Caesar's the things that are Caesar's and unto God's the things that are God's. What Jesus did in this incident is he slipped through the horns of the dilemma. You see, the zealots and the others that were involved in this trickery were trying to get Jesus to fall into an either-or trap. Their idea was that you either serve God or you serve government, but you can't do both. It's the same problem and faulty thinking that the Jehovah's Witnesses have. They will not pledge allegiance to the flag because they say, my allegiance is to God. I don't really understand how Jehovah's Witnesses can consistently take marriage vows and pledge allegiance to each other in marriage. After all, their allegiance is to God. You see, some people don't understand that there are certain relationships that are complementary and that these things do not necessarily have to be contradictory. The zealots thought it was sinful to pay taxes unto Caesar. And they wanted to see which side Jesus was on. If he said, no, it is not lawful, then they could charge Jesus with sedition and rebellion against Rome. If he said, yes, it is lawful, then he loses the support of the zealots and he antagonizes many of his followers. So they thought that they had him either way. But Jesus understood an important principle that I want to begin with this morning, and that is that our life, hopefully, is a series of concentric circles. God is the outer circle. He is the one that is preeminent and preeminent in our thinking, and everything must fit within those parameters. But hopefully our service to government, our service in our marriage, our service in every other area of our life can fit and be in concert with our allegiance to God. And of course, we understand that the Bible clearly says, Acts 5 and verse 29, we must obey God rather than man. So if there's an occasion where there's a conflict directly, we have to let Jesus Christ outrank Bill Clinton or something of that nature if it came down to some sort of direct choice. But generally speaking, Romans 13, we're supposed to be in subjection to the higher powers, and God wants us to be good, responsible citizens as long as it doesn't violate God's law or become more important to us than God's laws. If you stop and think about your life, you'll find that you have to deal every day with this issue of conflicting loyalties. As I stand before you, I have loyalties and obligations to my God, to my wife and my children, my physical family, to my spiritual family in Tampa, to Florida College as my employer. I have obligations to the lost, to the saved, to my health, to my country, and the list goes on and on and on, and so does yours. And when you stop and think about it, and you look at all these different commands in the Scripture, I think that really what we are as Christians are jugglers. And we've got all these obligations, all these things that God says, pay attention to these elements. And we got all these different balls up in the air, and we have to give them consistently enough attention, or one or more of them, if you spend too much time over here, is going to fall on the ground, isn't it? And trying to keep all these balls up, just like a juggler, takes constant attention and reassessment. And it can be very, very easily to be getting involved in good things, but while you're getting involved in this good thing over here, you neglect these three good things over here that God says you're also supposed to pay attention to. And as a fellow juggler, I want you to know that I think this is one of the most difficult and challenging things we have to deal with. In Romans chapter 13 and verse 7, Paul says, "Render unto all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." As jugglers in this game of life, what we find is we have to constantly ask our question is, how should I allot my time? When is enough enough in one area? I've spent enough on this now. Now I need to go over and do something else. And as we wake up in the morning and talk in terms of being Christians and trying to give our life to the Lord, we have to wrestle with these issues every day. Every day we have 24 hours. And so what are we going to do with those hours that the Lord has given us in any particular time frame? And everything we do has an opportunity cost that must be taken into account. Because every time I choose to do one thing, I am also choosing not to do everything else, assuming that in most circumstances you can't do two things at one time. I'm not talking, of course, as we wrestle with these kind of choices in our life, about going to an X-rated movie or having a Bible class. We're not talking about easy choices that are just a decision between light and darkness. Those things are easy, even for the immature and new Christian to deal with. But what I'm talking about are choices between better and best. Do I spend time with my wife tonight and with my children, which is certainly a good thing to do? Or should I leave them for tonight so I can go and admonish a weak brother, which I also find is a good thing to do? Should I spend personal time in Bible study and fill up my own cup? Or should I spend time tonight going out sharing the gospel with someone who's lost that they might be saved? Do I teach a Bible class at the local church where I attend that I might feed others and be of service? Or is it time for me to stay in a Bible class so that I can be fed and be strengthened myself? Do I take a second job so I can be responsible about providing for my family, even though by doing so, I'm not going to be with them as much as I would be otherwise, and might cause me to have less time to do the Lord's work? Honestly, those are gray areas. And I can't answer those issues for you. And you have to pray for wisdom and discern at this particular time in my life, what does it really mean to seek the kingdom first? This is a struggle of priorities. And I think all of us deal with what I call the pressure of the tyranny of the trivial, that oftentimes erodes away at our time and our energies more than we realize. Because every day there's this battle between things that are important and things that are essential. And frankly, usually the important things that need to get done are screaming at us so loudly to be taken care of that we often take care of those things and neglect the things that are even more important, the things that are essential spiritually. You know, sometimes a home can be a very noisy place. You wake up in the morning and you may realize that the car needs to be fixed. And if it's not fixed, you can't get to work. And so the car is screaming at you to be fixed. You look outside and oops, the lawn needs to be mowed. And the lawn is screaming to be fixed because you know if you don't get it mowed pretty quickly, your neighbors will literally be screaming at you to get your lawn mowed. And you've got bills that constantly come in and pile up on the desk. And those are screaming to be paid and to be taken care of because you know if you don't take care of them shortly, people are going to be calling you, asking you, what's going on here? And the house needs to be clean and you need to buy and fix the food. And anybody who just has lived a normal life understands what I'm talking about. There are just certain basic things that are important, that are good, to be responsible. You have to take care of them. And they're screaming to be done. And we oftentimes have so many balls up in the air we're trying to juggle that we're under stress a good percentage of the time. And as we get involved in all those things, and we should do those kind of things I just mentioned, sometimes we fill up our lives so much with those things that are important that we neglect the things that are essential, like prayer to God and serious Bible study and really trying to love your spouse and your children in the way they need to be loved, taking time to befriend a neighbor so that he might be receptive to being taught, developing meaningful Christian relationships. And by the way, as we talk about this issue of priorities, let us remember that relationships are what makes life worth living. There's an old adage, people are more important than things. And don't ever forget that as you go about this very important business of setting priorities. Let me give you an example that might help you to clarify what is really essential and most important in your life this very morning. I want you to imagine that you have just finished shopping at the Northridge Mall. And as you were driving home, you turn on the radio and you hear a rather disturbing voice that sounds rather frightened as this disc jockey begins to tell you that they just got a wire that indicates that there's been a civil war in Russia and that the hardliners are upset with Yeltsin and they basically kicked Yeltsin out. And in the process for this struggle for power in Russia, some of the nuclear weapons that Russia still controls were one of the things that we're fighting over. And somehow or other, in this literal battle for control over these weapons, a couple of those buttons got pushed. And one of them was one of those missiles that was headed for Los Angeles metropolitan area. And it has been pushed, and it is now making its flight over the pole. And it should be here in about 20 to 25 minutes. And everything within a 150-mile radius is going to be destroyed. I don't care how fast a car you have, there's basically nowhere to go and no place to hide. I think that'd probably ruin most people's day, don't you? Now, I want to ask you, if you got that news that basically in 20 minutes it's going to be over, what would be your first thought? Would it be, oh no, I have to edge the grass? Or, oh no, what about my house? Or what about those bills that have to be paid? Would you even give those things a second thought? In a moment like that, I suggest that the very first thing you're going to be concerned about are your loved ones. If you're married, you're going to think about your spouse and your family. And if you've got any sense at all, you're going to think about your own relationship with God and whether you're ready to stand and meet your Maker. Someone has said that if we were given a five-minute warning before the end of time, that the telephone lines all over the world would be jammed with people trying to get in touch with other people, either trying to tell them, I love you, or I'm sorry. Do you have some unfinished business to take care of? If there is something that you would do if you had 20 minutes before the end of time, and frankly, we may just have 20 minutes before the end of time, God has not told us the final day, so we'll learn to honor every day. I want to suggest that you get your priorities straight and you get those things taken care of now. You see, sometimes it takes a crisis or a catastrophe for us to realize what really matters and what is really important. And I'm trying to encourage all of us to refocus as we think about this issue of basic priorities, this struggle between good, better, and best. And we need to make sure as a congregation and as individuals that we're not majoring in minors or minoring in majors. One business consultant put it this way. The main thing is to make sure that the main thing is the main thing. And that's right. Peter Drucker said this, that the key success in business, the key to success in business is not doing things right, but always making sure you're doing the right things. And that sometimes we get so focused on doing things right, we don't stand back and ask, am I even doing the right thing? That's true in our Christian walk. That's true in our congregational choices. And that's a very profound question that periodically we need to ask ourselves as we deal with this issue of priorities. Now, I want you to turn to the worksheet that I've provided for you on priorities. And I have listed for you, in random order, five basic priorities that most everybody has in life. Your job, your profession, things that revolve around making a living, If you're a parent, your children, your personal relationship with God, your spouse, and your obligations to have a ministry to others, both in benevolence as well as in personal teaching. Now, what I'd like for you to do is to take a few moments and categorize these 1 to 5. 1 being the most important, and then go all the way down. And then after you've had a chance to think about that and categorize these based on your understanding of the scriptures, then we're going to back up and we're going to talk about this a little further. So I'm going to be quiet and give you a chance to think this through and to list, based on your own judgment, what are the top 5 priorities. And then I'll tell you my answers and why, and perhaps we'll have some time for discussion. So I'll give you a few moments to think that through. Just kind of look up and let me know when you're finished. Everybody have those categorized? 1 through 5? When we talk about priorities, let me make a point very clear. We're not talking about necessarily what you spend the most time doing. For example, a typical person may spend 7 or 8 hours a night sleeping and 1 hour a day eating. But I don't think that means that you can say that sleeping is 8 times more important than eating. It may be that you spent a quality 15 minutes of devotional time in prayer, and that was the most significant 15 minutes you spent all day. So oftentimes, it's not necessarily just the sheer amount of quantity time we spend doing something, as much as the fact that we consistently prioritize our life and give certain things attention on a regular basis. Isn't that what a juggler has to do? All he has to do is just real quick run over there and throw the ball up, and he's got a good amount of time until he can go back somewhere and throws it up again. And that really is what we have to think of our life as being, is consistently thinking about all these obligations and remembering not to neglect any of them. Now, what did you guys put for the first priority? This one's the easiest, I think. What's that? Yeah, your personal relationship with God. If somebody want to defend that, you can think of a Bible verse that tells us that that ought to come first. Jerry. Okay, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all these things shall be added unto you. Matthew 6 and verse 33. That's pretty clear. Isn't that a statement of priorities? And I don't know how you work that out in your life, but when I look at my things to do list, I try to think about the things that have to do with the kingdom and give those a priority over other things that are more mundane. And as long as you can think in those terms, I think that's at least one way we can practically do that. Well, specifically, how do you go about seeking the kingdom first? Well, I think one thing, of course, you have to do is find regular times to feed on the Word of God. Most of us stop at least 3 times a day, maybe more, to nourish our physical bodies. And most of us make a big deal. You know, somebody comes home and says, "Man, I was so busy today, I didn't even have time to eat lunch. Did you hear me? I was so busy, I missed a meal. I mean, we want a medal." Like that's some really big deal. I wonder how many spiritual meals that we miss. Jesus says, "I am the bread of life," John 6 and verse 35. "Man cannot live by physical bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God," Luke chapter 4 and verse 4. Sometimes people come to me and they're spiritually weak, and they just tell me they just feel like they have no self-control and they have all these other difficulties spiritually and they're filled with anxiety and worry. And I'll ask them, "Well, how often do you study your Bible and spend meaningful time in prayer?" "Well, I'm busy and this came up," or "I used to." I mean, what would you think if somebody came to you and said, "I just feel awful, I just have no energy," and you said, "When's the last time you ate?" "Well, I get busy and I don't have time to eat very often, you know, maybe a couple weeks ago, or maybe a couple times." You'd think, "Well, why don't you enjoy a few good, nutritious meals? Maybe you'll feel better, fella." I mean, we understand that in the physical arena, don't we? That sometimes we expect to be strong when we don't nourish our souls spiritually through Bible study and meaningful prayer. I personally believe that prayer is our most powerful tool for wisdom and perfection, and yet for the most part, because we just don't prioritize it, we find that it is miserably neglected and pitifully underdeveloped in most of us. And yet, if we would just dedicate 15 minutes of every day to meaningful personal prayer time, that's only 1/96 of a 24-hour period, I think we'd find it would make an amazing difference as far as our personal walk with God. Let's put it on another level. That's about 1/100th of a day. God gives you a dollar, and we can't find time to give him back a penny as far as prioritizing a time period. The third thing that is often overlooked when it comes to seeking the kingdom first is time for our emotional and physical health. We need to spend time making sure our physical bodies are fit to inhabit our spiritual selves, because after all, we are holy temples. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 8, bodily exercise profiteth little, but godliness is profitable for all things. So, spiritual exercise is more important, but there is value in taking care of yourself so that you're in a position to be a good example and a good influence for others. I personally struggle with finding time for regular exercise. I don't know if many of you do. I find that to be one of my most difficult challenges. But I believe that's a part of being a good steward of what God has given me, and that I ought to make that a priority. We need to give time to our own personal development and growth. We have a stewardship, not just of our physical bodies, but of our mental capacities. Think of the parable of the talents. One man was given 2 talents, he produced 4. Another was given 5, he produced 10. Those are the ones that were told, well done, thou good and faithful servant. It's the person who didn't do anything with what he had that God said was wicked and slothful. One of my favorite sayings is this: what we are at birth is God's gift to us. What we make of ourselves throughout life, the kind of person that we wind up being when we die, that is our gift back to God. And certainly that is a part of what's involved in seeking God's kingdom first. Okay, what's the second priority? Under God, what do you have as number 2? Jerry? Okay, spouse. I appreciate your saying that, because there are some people who put children and then spouse. And I think it's very important that we understand that I think the priorities are as Jerry indicated. You have God and your personal relationship with him, then your spouse, then your children, I think personally, then your vocation, and after that we have ministry to others. And I'm going to explain why I put them in that order in just a minute. One of the things that will help you to remember this as you check on your priorities are what I call the 5 P's. And I like these because it's easy for me to remember. First, you want to be the best person you can be, then the best partner you can be, then the best parent, then the best professional, then the best public servant. The 5 P's tells us what are our proper priorities. So let's go over those. Can you remember those? Say those with me. First, I want to be the best person, then the best partner, then the best parent, then the best professional person, then the best public servant. All right. Now, why is it so important that right underneath God we put our families, and that we put our spouse, if necessary, you have to prioritize this, just a slight notch above the children? Obviously, we need to give some special time and consideration to that person that we have chosen to share our life with. And for a husband and wife to keep their marriage intact is the best thing they can do for their children, because it's out of a healthy, growing marriage relationship that your children's security grows. I saw this particular family circus a while back. In fact, I think my wife picked this out for me, and I appreciated it. And here's a little girl who looks in and sees her mom and dad kissing, and she says, I feel all warm and happy when I see mommy and daddy kissing. Actually, probably a 90s kid would be going, ooh. But I think what they're really thinking is that. Best thing, fellas, you can do for your children is to love their mother. And the best thing you can do, ladies, for your children is to really fervently love their father. And that is the basis of a very strong relationship. Now, I've been privilege to teach marriage and family for the last couple of years at the college, and I have learned a lot that has really fascinated me. And one of the things that just really got my attention was what sociologists refer to as the U-shaped curve of marital happiness. And this doesn't have to be now. I don't want to be fatalistic. But this is the way it typically is in most American marriages. What this actually demonstrates is the happiness of the husband and wife relationship. This one here has to do with the male, and this is the female. And so you start off at the honeymoon period really high, and things continue fairly good until the honeymoon begins to wear off a little bit. And guess what this first major dip is? The birth of the first child. And you know what this dip is? The second child. You know what this dip is? The third child. And oftentimes the husband feels like the wife is so consumed with the kids that he's totally left out. And it's not unusual for husbands to report almost feelings of jealousy about these kids who consume so much of their wife's attention. And then you come back up to this, and guess what? This is when the kids start to grow up and they start to leave the nest. And guess what? The marriage tends to get better. And in some cases, if you've really nurtured it appropriately, once the kids go, the marriage goes way up here. It's even better than during the honeymoon under some circumstances. But there is a great pitfall that well-meaning, godly mothers can fall into, and fathers as well, and that is you become too much mother and not enough wife, or too much father and not enough husband. And it is so easy to get so consumed with the kids that you neglect your marriage, and that's the worst thing you can do for your kids. And so even really committed, spiritual, godly people can fall into some of these traps when it comes to this issue of priorities. And what you have to do to avoid that is to make sure that you remember that you don't neglect the marriage just because you want to be the best parent you can be. Let me read to you a letter from an older woman who was divorced after 43 years of what she referred to as a good marriage. I quote, "In retrospect, I was too much mother and not enough wife. We lost communication and interest, and we filled up the empty spaces with family life, married children's problems, illnesses, and other things. I didn't travel with my husband in his work, and so he picked up a waitress and had an affair with her for 2 years before asking for a divorce. His children despise him, and they call him a dirty old man who rejected and abandoned their mother. All his friends in the business world think he cracked up, and that's so sad, because he's always been a good man, a success in his business, trustworthy, honorable. A divorce like this is sadder than death. Please encourage others to keep their marriage alive, vibrant, and growing. Be careful not to become so involved in your children that you neglect your spouse." And that is certainly good, solid advice. I have two children at home, Amy, who's 15, and Allison, who's 12, who just last Saturday obeyed the gospel. It's a great moment in our family. And when Allison was first born, we had a little nursery, and we had a little poster that I asked my wife to frame because I liked the sentiment of it so much. And it's the poster of a little girl down on her knees praying, and her prayer is, "Lord, help mommy and daddy to love each other." And we as parents need to remember that we are modeling what a marriage is all about in front of our children. They're learning so much about how they're going to ultimately be in their marriage by what they see or don't see in us. You start off husband and wife, the children come, they grow up, they leave, and guess what? You're then back to where you started. And sometimes you focus so much on your careers and on the children that the children leave, you have the empty nest syndrome, and you look over at one another and you feel like you're married to a stranger. And that's why there is a spurt of divorce when the empty nest hits. Because suddenly you look over and you didn't grow together during those years. And it's really tough to keep that balance the way it ought to be. And being aware of that will help you to avoid that pitfall. Periodically arranging for babysitters so you can go out and continue to date and that kind of thing will help you to make sure that your first priority is your personal relationship with God, and right underneath that is your spouse, your marital relationship. Right underneath that is your children, which I think ought to be your next priority. And how tragic it is that sometimes children are born into families, and in regards to our priorities, sometimes people go to the other extreme and they don't really pay attention to them to the degree that they should. I think oftentimes there's some things you can do before the kids come, and there's some things you can do after they're gone, but certainly while they're there, they ought to be a major focus of both husband and wife. Well, one well-known gospel preacher had an evangelistic tour around the world planned, and shortly before it was time to go, he canceled it. And many people were very upset, thought he could have had a tremendous amount of good. And they asked him why, and he said, "I prayed about it and thought about it, and I have a teenage son that needed me at home. I share the responsibility for evangelizing the world with a great many people, but I am the only one that has the responsibility to be the father to that boy." Now, I don't know about you, but I think that preacher had his priorities right. You know, it's just almost axiomatic that many preachers, well-meaning, fall into the trap. They're so busy trying to convert the world, they neglect their own families. See, all of us, even as good people with the right motives, can oftentimes, without realizing it, get things out of sync. And that's why constantly reevaluating our priorities is so important. When I got married, I was concerned about this, and I was told that many preachers have family problems because they travel and they're on the road so much. And I promised my wife when I got married I wouldn't hold more than 5 meetings a year unless she could go with me. And I have kept that promise, and I'm trying to keep my meetings shorter so I'm not gone the whole week. I don't want to be gone teaching about the family while I'm neglecting my own. That's a whole issue, I think, of priorities that's very valid. And one of the things I found sort of fun, you have to be creative about this sometimes, is I've been taking one of my kids with me when I can. And that's special father-daughter time, and it allows me to preach the gospel as well as spend some family time together. A little expensive, but I think it's well worth the expense. My kids are going to remember that, I'm sure, the rest of their lives, those special trips they had with their dad when they were growing up. All right, next is vocation. Obviously, there needs to be time spent here. We need to be responsible. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8, if a man doesn't provide for his own household, he's worse than an infidel. However, I think it's too easy to use work as an excuse. Our elders, a number of years ago, stopped announcing, like they used to announce at the congregation where I worship, so-and-so is not here today because he had to work. Because there were some people who started taking jobs without really even making much of an effort to make sure that they have jobs that don't conflict with worship services. It's almost as if, well, if you got to work, you got to work. It's just too bad. And they didn't want to leave the impression that they felt like that was always acceptable. There may be some situations where there are extenuating circumstances. I guess God and that individual needs to make that choice. But we need to make sure that we understand that God outranks even our jobs. When you study the Old Testament, what was one of the primary things we're told that would cause you to break the Sabbath? And by the way, if you broke the Sabbath, it was a capital crime. That was the day that God set aside for worship. We know the answer to that. What was it? We're supposed to work on the Sabbath. Now, Sunday is, in the New Covenant, been set aside as the day of worship. Very important day we give to the Lord, and we partake of the Lord's Supper. And yet, many Christians seem to act like missing that day for work is no big deal. Under the Old Testament, they actually put you to death for working on the Sabbath. So I don't think it's a perfect parallel, but I think it's close enough that we need to make sure that our priorities are right. And if you have a job where you consistently have to miss services, I think you need to seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and these physical things, like making a living, will be added to you, and God will bless you as a result. This idea of seeking the kingdom first is not always easy. But this idea of being a good worker at your job is vital. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10 says, whatever you put your hand to do, do it with all your might. If you are a mediocre employee, why do you think people should listen to you about what you have to say about religion? On the other hand, if while you're there, you really are serious about being honest and being loyal to your employer and working hard as long as it doesn't conflict with your spiritual obligations, people are going to respect you, and you're going to do that to the glory of God, and you're going to find that you can actually use your job as your own pulpit, the platform for your own ministry, as you give glory to God in that way. So obviously, a good amount of time is going to be spent being responsible, making a living, and paying your bills. And then after you've taken care of those things, ministry to others. And the reason why I put this last is because you have to take care of these other things first before you can be the example you should be to others. But as you balance out your life and you try to juggle these balls, we have to make sure that a major ball that we are working with is concern for other people. Matthew 25 and verse 40, inasmuch as you've done it unto one of these, the least of my disciples, Jesus says, you've done it unto me. James 1 and verse 27 talks about pure and undefiled religion before God is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. John 13, as I've washed your feet and been of service to you, so I want you to be washing one another's feet. So as you go about and live your life, we are servants. And wherever we go, a top priority needs to be teaching others. But first, we have to make sure that we're the example we ought to be. It's possible to get so involved in serving others that you neglect your own family, your own health. You become an emotional basket case. You're not in any position where you can help anybody else. You know, I fly a lot, and it always impresses me that when they, before you take off, they go through all the little examples. If there's an accident and the air pressure in the airplane goes down, and you look and you see that the mask dropped down, who are you supposed to put the mask on first? Put your own mask on first, then after you've taken care of yourself, you're in a position to put the mask on your child. See, many people want to quickly try to get the mask on their child. They're worried about the child. In the meantime, they pass out and both of them die. See, we have to take care of our own spiritual needs first and be strong before we can be the example that we ought to be to other people. And so the key here is to remain balanced and to not cop out. And I think any time we're out of balance, we become a little bit of a freak, really. You can spend so much time studying and praying, and that's good. But if you never get out and apply what you've learned, your next door neighbor goes to hell. You see, there comes a time to get off your knees, to get your nose out of a book, to get out of your study and get busy about your Father's business. On the other hand, you can be so busy doing and beating the bushes, so to speak, that you neglect your own devotional life and your own personal strength. And that leaves you wide open to being susceptible to Satan's snares and his darts. It's just so hard to keep this balance. I was kind of naive as a young man. I was wrestling with whether going to law school, whether to preach, and what was the most important. And I really thought a lot about these priority issues. And when I decided not to go to law school and to go ahead and become a gospel preacher, feeling that the world needed another faithful gospel preacher much more so than it needed another lawyer. No offense to any lawyers in the audience. But when I made that choice, I thought, well, that's not going to be the most lucrative choice for me, but I think that's the choice that indicates the right kind of values, and I'll be laying up treasures in heaven. Well, I made that decision when I was about 21, 22, somewhere around there. And I kind of had the idea, well, I've made that choice. And it's over. No, it's not over. You're constantly being challenged as things come your way with choices. You have to constantly reassess and ask, how can I best serve the Lord? How can I best indicate the proper priorities? And so are you, aren't you? We always are wrestling with these issues. You get to retirement age, many people just go, oh, I'm going to kick back and travel. And that's all right to a certain degree. But you don't retire from the Lord and His service. You have to always work on what can I do, given the time that I'm given, to be a good stewardship of what the Lord has given me and make sure my priorities are what they ought to be. J. Wallace Hamilton, in one of his classic books, tells a story about hearing a terrible screeching sound one day just outside of his study. He pulled back the curtain and he looked over and he saw that his young son was playing with a neighborhood boy, and they'd got some old phonograph record out and they'd found this old record and that they had punched a hole about 2 or 3 inches away from the center, and they'd put that on the record player and they'd put the needle down. Because it was off center, the thing was wobbling and making this terrible screeching sound. And he banged on the window and motioned to his son, you know, stop that. And so then the boys took the record, put it back on the center, put the needle down, and then it brought forth beautiful, harmonious music. And he sat down and he said, you know, that's exactly the way it is with our lives. When things are out of kilter, there's discord. Things aren't quite right. There's a sense of restlessness. We don't have the peace that passes understanding. But when things are centered on God and you have all those concentric circles in their proper place and they're all getting their proper attention, that's when you bring forth the fruits of the Spirit. That's when you don't have disharmony, but you have harmony and a sense of strength and integrity that enables you to be a great evangelistic influence. Christianity has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and therefore rarely tried. What we have to do foundationally as we think about our families is to make sure that they're in their proper place. God is first, our spouse is second, family is third, our job is fourth, and service to others is very important, but fifth, after we make sure we take care of these other areas. Let me suggest you do something. I get a big kick out of analyzing parting admonitions. You know, a lot of times people say, see you later, take it easy. Over the years, I've told my students at the school, that's probably not very good advice. Probably the biggest problem some of my students have is they're taking it too easy. It'd be a lot wiser to say, see you later, work hard. Now, wouldn't that be better advice? Yeah, what do we do? See you later, don't work too hard. Probably most people don't need that admonition. Yeah, that's what we give them. Mickey Crabtree, a brother who worships at another area congregation, said that he's well known for this admonition. He says, see you later, stay out of trouble. That's getting better, don't you think? But I want to suggest that maybe the best thing we could do to remind each other, to admonish one another in the faith, is to get in the habit of saying, see you later, and look your brother or sister right in the eye and say, keep your priorities straight. Because that's what it's all about. And that's where the devil works on us the most. Okay, let's look at our worksheet on priorities in the time we have left. Let's look at Roman numeral number 2. How might our marriage or spouse actually become too important? Is that possible? Let's have a little discussion here. What do you think? Jerry?
If the spouse is a Christian, I think it's less likely to happen.
I think that's correct. But was Solomon a good example of a man who was very wise, obviously, but in this area he faltered, and he allowed these foreign women that he married to draw his heart away from God? I have seen people who were sort of desperate for companionship and they're lonely, and I'm sympathetic to folks who feel that way, but instead of trusting in the Lord and waiting for the situation to be right, they rush into this. And they wind up, in many cases, selling their soul for a husband or wife. That can happen. In fact, as I have analyzed sin and what brought about the fall of man, I'm convinced that that was the very first sin of man. Basically, exalting his love for a woman above his love for God. Now, you think about that for a minute. When Adam was in the garden, we're told in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 13 and 15, that the woman was beguiled, but Adam was not beguiled. And yet he went ahead and got involved in the transgression. In other words, Eve was silly enough to believe the lies of that talking snake, the serpent. She was really taken in. She convinced herself what Satan said was so, and that's why she ate. Adam knew better. He didn't believe it. But he sinned anyway. I know it's wrong, but I'm going to do it anyway. It was a high-handed sin, and in that sense, maybe it was worse than what Eve did. So why would he have eaten if he knew the day he ate thereof, he would surely die? I can't come to any other conclusion except that he had seen that his wife ate. And he knew what that would mean for her, because he was not beguiled. And he was so enraptured with this beautiful woman that God had given him that he was more interested in following her and in being with her than he was in being with God. It has to be that. Obviously, he was more concerned about God. He would have said, well, woman, you made a terrible mistake. You shouldn't have eaten this, and I'm not going to eat it just because you did. My allegiance is to God. In this case, he had a greater allegiance to Eve, his wife, than to God. And so, I want to exalt the family and the importance of it in our priorities this week. But spiritual things and God have got to come first for things to be in sync. Now, Jerry made a very important observation. He said, well, if you marry someone who's a Christian, you're less likely to have trouble with that. Well, amen. I have a very good friend of mine, Marilyn Lovell, and she married an agnostic. Donald Lovell is one of the nicest men I know, but he is not a believer. He does not really stand in the way of Marilyn being very active and very involved in the church. And many people look at her and say, see, you can marry somebody who's not a Christian, and it can work out okay. Marilyn has made a public statement indicating, please don't use me as an example. And she has told me that she loves Donald very much, and yet this subject of religion is one that she just can't bring up. And so here it is, they're going to sleep at night, and she says, sometimes it just tears me up knowing that if the Lord were to come, he's going to hell and I'm going to heaven, I'll never see him again. And that's so hard on her. She chose not to have children because she didn't want to raise children in that kind of mixed environment. Fortunately, she's kind of adopted my two with her kids, and it's a wonderful example. And you know what else? Donald told her a couple years ago, said, you know what, Marilyn? The church and the Lord mean more to you.